go back to their communities and talk about these things.
Talk about the significance of the wall, and does it? Do children talk to you about it? You are talking about Manu, not his real name. There's a discussion of the wall on the southern border of U.S. and Mexico, but there's also a wall being discussed on the southern border. That's Mexico and Honduras. The Weekly Standard, the conservative publication, had a recent headline: Will Mexico build a wall on its southern border and make Trump pay for it? Maybe.
I mean, Mexico is no example of humanitarian treatment to people from Central America, and even to treatment with basic dignity. For many years, Mexico was an example of a country that was very open to receiving refugees and exiles from all over the world. There was an important Lebanese migration in the 70s. There was, of course, the big Spanish migration during the Franco years, and Argentinian, Chilean, Uruguayan, Brazilian migration during the dictatorships in the Southern Cone. But Mexico has never opened its doors to Central Americans or to Haitians now. And I think it's a matter of a fundamental racism. I think that Mexico was happy to bring in whiter people, para blanquear, we say, to whitify the country, but has never received Central Americans. It is, after all, a racist issue.
That border, by the way, would be built on the Mexico-Guatemala border. But
yeah,
finally, we have 10 seconds. Tell me how it ends, the title, where you got it.
My daughter keeps on asking me the same question even now. She always wants to know what's going on with the children that I work with and what their stories are, and she always wants to know how the story ends. But unfortunately, there's no ending. There's no happy ending.
Well, Valeria Luiselli, thanks so much for being with us. Award-winning writer, her latest book, Tell Me How It Ends, an essay in 40 questions. That does it for our broadcast. We'll be on a speaking tour starting this weekend, and we'll be covering the March on Science on the 22nd, the March on Climate Change on the 29th in Washington. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
I was searching for an answer when I reached out and found Narcotics Anonymous. I came to my first NA meeting in defeat, and I didn't know what to expect. Surrounded by fellow addicts, I realized I was not alone. I heard them talk about the same feelings I was afraid to share. Recovery is what happens at NA meetings. It is possible to stop using drugs. Call Narcotics Anonymous. We can help. 631-884-9500.
Did you know that there is a peace and justice group located in your community? North Country Peace Group meets every Saturday from 11 a.m. to noon on the corner of 25A and Bennett's Road in Setauket. We are a group of activists working on a variety of issues, including stopping perpetual war, keeping corporate money out of politics, gun control, and inequality. Stop by, show your support, and let's continue the revolution together.
Yes, let's do that. It's 6 o'clock, actually 6:01, and it's a Tuesday evening. You're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, and it's time, once again, for Off the Wall.
황수령 김일성 대원수님을 따라 하늘의 눈으로 만리를 헤치며 강도 일제를 타생하고 조국 광복의 새봄을 알아온 항일혁명 투사들의 불굴의 투쟁용신을 가슴 깊이 새겨주며 고무당당히 나아가는 열병 대원들. 장군들의 손길 아래 해방 후 그처럼 복잡한 속에서도 우리 혁명 무력이 항일의 빛나는 전통을 굳건히 계승한 정규 무력으로 강화발전된 것은 주체적 건강사의 특기할 역사적 사견입니다. 백전백승의 강철의 영장이신 이대헌 수령님의 탁월한 명가 밑에 조국의 자유와 독립을 수호하기 위한 반가리 결사전에서 세계 최강을 자랑하던 이제를 부끄러뜨린 승리자들의 대우가 지축을 울리며 나아갑니다.
지난 조국해방 전쟁 시기에 근위부대 정대들이 자랑찬 군기를 대우 앞에 휘날리며 들어서고 있습니다. 열정의 부대에 진격의 화살로 명성똥친 긍지를 안고 김철이 육군 소장을 손들어 힘차게 나아가는 근위서울 제3호병사단 열병정대.
You know, here at WUSB, we don't expect this kind of enthusiasm, but we're trying. We're trying to get both our audience and our staff to really have, well, this manner of speaking, for one thing. We want to... This is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Kyle, welcome.
Yes.
You've got it. Okay.
I'm here.
We need to somehow establish the North Korean style of speaking, which is this hyper-enthusiastic tone. I don't quite know how to describe it, but you hear it here.
Yes.
It's how their newscasts are. I mean...
It is very passionate and important that we speak to you today on Off the Wall.
That's good. But, you know, I just leaned on a button and turned it off accidentally. And I'm watching. You know, this is a video. And we can't even describe what we're seeing on the video. But there is no imperfection whatsoever. Everybody is marching in step. There's thousands and thousands of people here. And I'm looking for one single foot that's out of step. And I'm not seeing one. And I just hit a button and screwed up the sound. You know, I wouldn't last a minute in that square with all these people getting everything 100% completely right. I mean, Kyle, if you see a single mistake, let me know what it is, because I have yet to see one, and I've watched this video a couple of times. It's from the parade on Saturday, April 15th, and that's their holy day. It's the birthday of Kim Il-sung, their founding father. And it's like Christmas and 4th of July rolled up into one. And everybody goes out. Everybody goes to parades. And boy, the military might is displayed for all to see.
Absolutely. A lot of uniformity and coordination, choreography, very deliberate timing, these stirring narrators basically... creating a backdrop for this incredible imagery. It's very bright emblems, symbols, regalia, I guess is what you call it, flags and all that kind of stuff. There's an interesting thing. People have these little, like, they're like a plume or like fans that they wave. Uh-huh. I think they're the spectators. And when you look from afar, it's this big, bright color, but you realize every single one of those is an individual waving a specific color, and it has this graphic that is created because everyone's holding one of these things in their hand, and you realize there's a lot of people.
Yeah, they're spectators, I suppose, in a way, but the real spectators are watching all this. They're participants, too.
Yeah.
You just wonder if there's anybody left. There are so many people participating in this. The mass games, which I saw... It's a whole stadium full of people that are flashing cards and making all kinds of imagery, and that's really amazing in and of itself too. The perfection there is simply incredible. But I mean, if we can just put aside for a second how scary this is, the uniformity of everybody all dressed in the same type of uniform, all marching in perfect synchronization, and just maybe try and appreciate what is going on here, because we have these perfect squares of columns, I guess, of types of soldiers. And every single one of these columns, they're dressed up differently. For instance, what we're seeing right now, we're seeing soldiers with helmets and some kind of rifle. Is that a rifle? Or
yeah, it would be like different divisions. This would be your infantry or the army.
And they all have three soldiers holding a flag marching in front of them. And there's like a soldier in front of them and a soldier in back of them. But they're in this amazing formation. They're all, you know, pretty much doing the same thing, but every single column is different in one way or another. They're passing Kim Jong-un, the leader, who salutes them along with some other higher-ups in their government. And this just goes on and on and on. I'm not even getting to the point where they roll out all the artillery and show off what they've got. This is just the people. And you have to wonder, you know, while this is happening, are there other soldiers that are kind of guarding and doing soldier-like things? Because this is an awful lot of people.
Yeah, and they unfurl the flag. It's such so synchronized and
yes,
amazing. Yeah. So yeah, there's also heavy equipment, as you said, that comes out. And
I haven't got to that point yet.
Yeah.
But you unfurl the flag right when you pass Kim Jong Un, and that's when he salutes you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you better not screw that up.
There's nothing like it, though. I see they come out perpendicular, and then I think the whole square does a 90-degree turn.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen how that works, but yeah, picture this column of people. How many people would you say is in one of the columns?
I don't know. Is that maybe
1, 2, 3, 4, 5? I mean,
1,000?
No, it's not that
each
many.
Each square is 1,000?
Probably a couple of hundred, at least. Maybe 200 to 300 people all marching in a square together. But if they're going in one direction and then they have to make a 90-degree turn to go the other direction, how exactly do they do that?
It's really interesting how they hold their arms straight down. If they're not holding a weapon of some kind, the individual has their arms straight down. And
these guys I'm pointing to now, do you notice how when they walk, they somehow walk differently than these guys? Oh my God, there's so many of them. But they seem to be sort of walking on air. They kind of like fly a little bit as they kick up their heels.
Yeah, and their toes are pointed, and it is.
This guy, he seems to be like flying a little bit whenever he walks.
They're leaning back, yeah.
I don't know how. I mean, this is incredible. Look, forget all the talk about, you know, the oppressiveness and the starvation and the brutality. Let's all just agree, this is pretty awesome that they can pull this off. I mean, wow. That is, it's just unbelievable. And look, this general is passing a message to Kim Jong-un right now. He basically was talking behind a piece of paper so that nobody could read his lips. This is on YouTube. Just look up North Korean Parade 2017 complete, and you'll see this. And pick the one where the commentators are talking in the background, because that's really pretty awesome, too. And I'd like to hear a translation of this. But when you're in North Korea, I was in North Korea once, this is how people talk, not only on the radio and television, in real life when they're showing off a museum. They have this tone, this super enthusiastic tone, and it's really kind of spooky, kind of crazy.
It's prophetic.
Yeah.
Right. It's got a little bit of that, like, stirring. I don't know what. I mean, it's this strange.
Yeah, and there's women who march with the soldiers as well. They have women infantry. I'm just amazed at how many different uniforms they have and just how well kept the whole thing is. It's just something like it's almost not human to see this kind of perfection. And yeah, like I said, it scares me. It is really scary to see this. So Kim Jong-un is laughing at something. You have to wonder what they're saying back there.
I like to see him march like that. I don't think he could.
Well, I think even the suggestion that he do that over there would be tantamount to treason. It is hard to walk like this. What kind of soldiers are these, Kyle? Look at their faces. They're
wow.
Very dark.
Yeah, they have some kind of camouflage on their face.
Another message is being passed to Kim Jong-un. I wish this was television. I wish we could show this to you while we're watching it ourselves.
He's reading the live tweets or something.
Yeah, probably is. This is what Trump just said on Twitter.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, we're getting a lot of likes on Facebook. Yeah, no, this is great.
You know, it's having been there, you're blown away by all this. You're blown away by the weirdness, by just the dedication and fanaticism. And it just makes you really think about what humans are capable of, both in a good way and a bad way.
Isn't, like, and it also makes me think of state sovereignty.
Uh-huh.
That it's really important in the world. It's part of history, yeah, and it's part of how we structure ourselves now. In modern manifestations, it's the reflection of history, of course, how we've drawn borders and conquered and on and on. But this is the manifestation of sovereignty. Oh, I see the people with the fans I described. They're walking forward very carefully.
Yes,
you see that?
Thousands and thousands of people are slowly
shuffling.
Yeah, they're moving towards this massive square, and soon they will completely fill it. And then they wind up spelling all kinds of words and making animation.
See how they shuffle? They're like just moving in ever so slowly.
They, you know, say what you will. They have so many parades and dances and parties in this massive square in Pyongyang. It's something to behold. It really is.
So, yeah, I mean, but this is how they show off. When you are a sovereign, independent state, this is... the military is one of the things that you, I guess, rely on, especially in an isolated. That's another phrase or just way of describing North Korea that has been thrown around a lot. They're very isolated.
Yes.
And in being so isolated, their sort of priority to defend themselves and maintain that is I guess top of the list. And then this is the logical extent, you know, as a result.
You know, it's basically, it's a country full of dancers. And, I don't mean that to ridicule. They really are able to put a number together in the mass games, for instance, in all kinds of other dance competitions, which I don't really participate in outside of their country. But this, too, just watching the footwork try it. Try walking down your street at night, maybe, where somebody can see you, and kicking up your feet. And keeping that up for like a mile or so. And then try every time you kick up one foot, leaving the ground with your other one. Because that's what these people are doing. And it's unbelievable. And every single one of them is in step. Nobody is out of step. You can say it's a fear factor that everybody is scared to death and doesn't want to get anything wrong. But, you know, even with that, I would think somebody would be so nervous they'd mess it up. I know I would be.
Well, I think it's all to the music, because I don't imagine there being a way for them to actually communicate and cue different things. So I think this tone, the beat, is what the people marching use, and the people with the different color things, they know at particular points in the march or the song when they have to do what. I don't know how else you would do it. This is thousands and thousands of people. How would you signal, okay, everybody with the blue thing, switch from pink to blue, and because we need to show the dear leader our hashtag or whatever.
They don't have the radios. They're not using phones. They just sort of, it's in their genes. I don't understand how they know what to do. Yeah, and not only are they all in lockstep in one formation, all the formations at the same time seem to be in the same lockstep. Wow. Okay. So anyway, that was just something to blow your mind a little bit.
Mesmerizing.
But, you know, North Korea has been in the news a lot lately. And I got to say, this is disturbing. This is very, very disturbing. I mean, what we're seeing now is disturbing for some reasons and kind of awe-inspiring for others. But what has been going on in the last week or two it's really, you know, I'm going to turn this down because it's kind of hard to compete with that. But it's going to still be playing in the background. On our screen, we've had the Trump administration weighing in on how they think they're going to be dealing with North Korea, and you know that a lot has happened in the last couple of weeks. We've bombed Syria with the 59 missiles. We dropped a weapon of mass destruction on Afghanistan, which is, I guess, the only way to describe the MOAB, the mother of all bombs, or whatever acronym is that's supposed to, whatever words that's supposed to stand for. And now we're talking about taking action against North Korea because we've run out of patience. And you know, I don't want to sound presumptuous here. I think I might, unfortunately, but I think I know more about North Korea than Donald Trump does. I've been there once.
Wow.
I studied it. Well, that's not saying much, Carl.
No,
it's
that's
really not saying that much. I won't say that about anybody else in his administration. I will say that about him. He doesn't even know what country he's bombing.
That's a fact. No, you're right. You are much more of an authority, I would say. I don't think anyone would challenge that.
Can he name the capital? He probably can't do that. Can he name the leader? Probably not. Can he talk about facts of the country? I seriously doubt it. And yet, this is the person making decisions. We are facing a massive threat here. There is no question about that. But it's because of his stupidity and arrogance more than anything else. Yes, this is a disturbing situation, what's happening in North Korea. It has been a disturbing situation since the 1950s. There's no question about that. But, you know, the whole world has tried to solve this problem for many decades now. And Donald Trump does not know more than those people. I don't know more than those people for sure. I don't know a fraction. But he certainly does not have the answer. It's not something simplistic. Sometimes simplistic answers work, but not usually in complex situations. And this is a very volatile, dangerous, complex situation that he thinks he can just muscle his way into and get people to toe the line. In this particular case, not going to happen. Not like that. And I worry that we're going to fall into lockstep behind him. Maybe not as in such precision as the North Koreans, but in a sloppy way that basically is to our great detriment. Pence was over there a couple of days ago, glaring at the North Koreans on the border. It was just so silly, so ridiculously silly. First of all, what has changed exactly in the last couple of weeks? I mean, from the perspective of the world, the only thing that's really changed is our attitude, the things that we have said. North Korea is doing what North Korea has always done, which is basically insulting everybody and occasionally firing a missile to test a missile, which, you know, to be honest, and this might sound controversial, I think they have every right to fire missiles and test them if they make the missiles themselves, as long as they don't land the missiles on other countries. Whatever, you know, we might not like it. We might not like the fact that they figured out how to make a nuclear missile. But who are we to say you're not allowed to do that? You know, that's always bothered me. I don't like the fact that they have them. I don't like the fact that we have them. And I don't like the fact that lots and lots of countries have these things. But for us to be the ones saying that we don't like you, therefore you can't have what we have, even if you make it yourself, it's really hard to justify that, you know?
No, yeah. How could you? I mean, that's it's hypocritical to the to the highest degree. I mean, yeah, we're not speaking from a position of moral authority in the least, considering our posture. And as you said, the small club of nations that wield weapons, and it is only escalation that this path will show us that is possible. We're not going to find a calm result you add pressure to this kind of escalation.
Yeah, it's true. You need to size up the situation for what it is. You need to look at the history. You need to communicate with the people. It's not that hard to do. It really is not that hard to do. Do you think it's easy to force somebody to do something when you're threatening them or when you're talking to them as people? You know, which will they resist more? The more you push North Korea, the more they will resist. The more you insult them, the more they will insult you back. And what we're doing now is we're watching this parade and we're talking about it in terms of, you know, a parade. This is, you know, interesting looking. It's well synchronized. It's one of the most amazing sights I've ever seen. And I said that also when I went over there.
Clearly, it's something they care very deeply about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you nailed it. They care very deeply about it. That alone is reason to say, tell us more about it. Listen to them. When we were over there, in North Korea. They weren't trying to convince us they were right. They weren't trying to get us to go to their side. They wanted us to hear them. They wanted us to share things with them and to be guests in their home. And that is a first step. It doesn't solve all the problems. You know, I'm not naive enough to think that. There's still all kinds of massive problems. There are problems here as well. I mean, you know, you can try and compare them, but there's worlds of difference. I know that. But the first thing you have to do is establish respect. And really, all the North Koreans want, or the North Korean government, that is, wants, is to be taken seriously, a seat at the table, dialogue of one sort or another, and take it from there. Those problems will not be solved. There'll still be oppression. There'll still be torture. There'll still be the starvation and all kinds of other things. But at least you're talking. At least you're not threatening each other. And maybe you'll make some progress because you're having that dialogue. What is there to lose? And it's really not what's been happening before this. So you can't say it's been tried and it's failed. No, we've never actually talked to them in a remotely friendly way to try and get them to reciprocate. And I think, you know, that needs to be tried, because what we're doing right now, it's a path to destruction on both sides. You know, we have nuclear weapons, they have nuclear weapons. If you push them, they will react. And you do not want that. Nobody wants that. It solves nothing. People in South Korea, I was watching some comments from South Korean citizens who live right there. And they don't think this is a good idea, how Trump is handling the situation. I would listen to them. I would listen to the people who live there. The people have to have, you know, show the effects of what happens because of our pig-headed policy. You know, that's something that we don't. Why are we the ones telling them what to do, saying that they're provoking us by launching a missile on their own territory? And saying that if you do this, you know, we're going to do something even worse to you. So, of course, they're going to threaten us as well. You know, interesting thing. This parade happened on Saturday, and we heard afterwards that there was a launch, a failed launch of an ICBM missile. And everybody in the media, everybody in the government is saying, oh, my God, I can't believe they did that. What a provocation. How dare they? And no one is really seeing it for what I think it is. And that is kind of conciliatory. Because we're talking about how, you know, if you guys test another nuclear weapon, we're going to be really, really angry. We're going to do something, you know, first strike, whatever, you know, really threatening them. And I don't know about you, but if I was threatened in that way, I would do exactly what I was being told not to do. I would test a nuclear weapon. Instead, what they did was they launched something else. Something not nearly as threatening. They had to do something. They couldn't just, you know, hide and not say a word, because that would be losing face. But they did something, and yet we don't see that as any kind of consolation that that they didn't rise to our threat, but they did something. Instead, we're trying to provoke them even more. And that's just, you know, that's what you do when you know nothing about the situation, when you know nothing about foreign policy. And yeah, you know, all the people are in place who know nothing about this. You got Tillerson, you got Pence, you got Trump. They're idiots. They don't know what they're doing. They are leading us into war on a number of fronts. Syria, Afghanistan, North Korea, you name it. And this is all within the first 100 days. This is all within the last couple of weeks. You know, we were ruining the day when they started messing up domestic policy, but now they've turned their attention to foreign policy. It's really kind of scary.
Yeah, and the readout of that test being a conciliatory thing is the job of the State Department, and is not going to happen unless you have people that are going to take a reasoned and intelligent approach to the actual reality, and I think that it's complicated because we're in the area, and our presence makes them quote threatening or having a whatever kind of launch in the area on their own territory, so to speak, is considered an attack or some kind of attempt at what we consider our neighbors and our allies in the area, namely Japan, and on and on and on. So it's, I think, also part of that old reach of our country and the interests of it that have made action like that something we actually take personally, if not from pressure through those diplomatic relationships, it's our own sort of diluted concept of self-importance in the area. Does that make sense?
I think it does. You know, I think it does.
But you're right. Like, that reasoned, thoughtful approach, it really should, it should come from people who have wisdom and experience in this area.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, and I don't want to sound like an apologist for North Korea in any sense, but how many countries have they bombed? How many countries have they invaded? I mean, yeah, there was the Korean War. I'm not sure who started that. I've heard many reports that the South Koreans started that. So you could argue that was simply defense, or that they considered that their own land, whatever. But, you know, for a country with this kind of military, with this kind of weaponry, think about it. You know, we have a huge military, and we're constantly going on field trips and bombing places and invading countries and things like that. It's true. Whether you believe in it or not, that is what we do. And North Korea has all of this, and yet they stay home.
It's,
think about that. I mean, we don't talk about it like that. It's basically, this is all talk and occasionally firing a missile up in the air and testing something on your own ground. But they don't actually go into other places and try and take over the government or bomb them into submission. So it's not really a level playing field here. We can say North Korea is a threat, and there is certainly a threat there. But to look upon it as something, say, in the days of the Cold War with the Soviet Union, it's not like that. It's not like that at all. And you have to realize that before you can even start a dialogue and try and come to some kind of resolution.
It is a lot more of a defensive force. You really get that impression. And from the actual history, I mean, they don't. Mm-hmm. They don't have that. But the type of military actions that the U.S. has participated in is the sort of culmination of what our modern military had been sort of molded into, or the idea was to be a more agile, less traditional military that is not as doesn't have as heavy a footprint, and on and on. You can get into all the details of military jargon, but the point is, we're also a lot more capable in a variety of different theaters, as they were. In other words, we have a lot more specialization and capability in space, and perhaps in the cyber realm, North Korea can compete with the U.S., but our investments and the kind of tooling that has been done in the U.S. is to create expertise in that cyber or space or Navy or aerospace. All of those factors have been changed in ways to make them more modern, while keeping parts of them, in the traditional parts that have served us so well and that will continue to be capabilities that we rely on as a country. But none of that really makes a whole lot of difference when you actually look at the policy, because that's what dictates where and why we go to these places as the U.S. You know, that adventurism and colonialization or nation building, whatever you want to call it, is campaigned for by lobbyists, special interests, big corporations, nation states influenced by big corporations, and the military industrial complex.
Okay, I see an imperfection here. Do you see that one soldier? Everyone's dressed in green. He's wearing orange. So he's going to get a talking to. And another person there fell down. And nothing like that is happening. It's not a single bit of... You know, is this Photoshopped? Can you do Photoshop for an entire parade? I would say this is something that doesn't really exist, but I've been there and I haven't seen a parade like this, but I've seen the mass games and I've seen other examples of just the perfection and coordination. And wow, that is just, it blows you away. We should not minimize it. We really shouldn't minimize it. You know, we tend to do that with our enemies, but acknowledge when they get something amazingly right, just as far as the coordination. Look at these guys. They've got suits and ties. They're marching with, I don't know what kind of soldiers those are. It really is fascinating to watch.
The one other thing I would say, though, in response to your comment, though, is about, like, testing and blasting things. Uh-huh. That's big stuff. Like, those are weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, like when the kind we actually use this week.
Right. When you get into comparing, like, a kinetic weapon, even though it's very, very large, mm-hmm. and as you're saying, whether deliberately or subtly, mm-hmm. implying that this kinetic bomb was mass destruction, it did destroy a large area where it was used. But
there's no other word to describe it. I mean, if you drop that in a city, you destroy the city. So, yeah, I'd call that a weapon of mass destruction. Absolutely.
Right, right. So that's totally valid, but it's not atomic. And what North Korea is implying and threatening is that they are building the ability to deliver an atomic payload.
Mm-hmm.
And they have very large population centers, and there's no going back. There's no undo. There's no,
right.
You know, let's steer it into the water kind of thing. I mean, maybe, but I don't know. Maybe that's, I don't think that's the focus of their weapons program. The focus is to do very specific lethal things. And if we're to believe their interests and care about South Korea, like Seoul or Tokyo or wherever, uh-huh. you know, to say nothing of the West Coast or, you know, other Western type places in Asia, then we should care where he's launching and what he's launching.
Sure, we should care. We should care about all of the nuclear
weapons.
It's
not like it's a big firework, you know. It's
absolutely, but you know, he's not launching nuclear weapons into the air and dropping them in the those are tested underground.
Right.
From what I understand, these are other tests of other missiles. But you know, there's nuclear weapons all over the place. France has nuclear weapons. You know, I'm concerned about all of them. And because we agreed that we're not, who keeps turning the damn phone on? Who keeps doing that? Boy, I cannot believe people do this right now. Hold on a second. I got to turn the phone off because somebody turned it on. Sorry about that. Other countries have these weapons, and they could easily fall into the wrong hands. And yeah, while we're looking at the danger here, we're ignoring the danger in all the other places as well. So just because we believe they shouldn't have them is not a reason to expect them to agree to that. We need to look at the bigger picture and try and deal with that. You know, it's really, you know, it's disturbing for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, how many missiles can we hit them with? Think about that. Think about how they feel. Think how threatened they are. And you know, this is a result of our attitude. I mean, yeah, a nice parade and all that, but also their attitude towards the rest of the world. And it's not healthy. It's not healthy. And if Trump really believes that he can force them to do things with his attitude, he's going to be in for a rude awakening. And how maturely he deals with that is really going to dictate our future, literally. Because I don't think North Korea is a threat. I think other countries being drawn in to try and stop us is the threat.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what you just said is so important. The fact that they know who they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Yeah.
You see all these tanks? You see all these?
Yeah, the tanks are going by
these
now.
These missiles? They know who they're up against.
Yes.
They know at least vaguely,
uh-huh.
they can imagine how it would go down. And that other thing you said is also really important. How would we look annihilating them?
Uh-huh.
And who would intervene? Who would approach us and say, you know, that thing you did, we're not happy about it, and you're going to have to pay, or you're going to have to deal with now how we feel about you.
Right.
And that escalation is not something we can ignore. I mean, we're foolish to ignore that. And that, again, is the result of escalating in this way.
Right. And it's not getting us anywhere. It's moving us backwards. And these guys are not going to figure out how to solve the problem in a few days in office without even knowing the history.
You know what? I think the other thing I was trying to say is it is similar to creating a backdoor in encryption. We talk about this all the time. Uh-huh. You can't, you know, have your cake and eat it too. And if we're going to wield these kinds of weapons for a sovereign state to do the research and put it together under the like most dire of sanctions is, first of all, an amazing feat. Mm-hmm. Of smuggling and reverse engineering, whatever other kind of design and production they're able to do under the circumstances, but it's a direct result of the climate and the industry, as I said, the military industry, and what is considered the state of the art. So as much as we might like to say that you can only use safe missiles or something, it doesn't really translate. You know, this is they're playing the game the way the game is presented, and why would we expect any less? It's great, and it's so obvious when we cling to the framing of it and don't take their conciliatory actions as something to read. Mm-hmm. as a gesture. It's foolhardy because we have as much control in influencing this climate, you know, backing away. And that's why people came to the table for to end proliferation in Ukraine and other places.
I'm just noticing something. I don't know the types of tanks I'm seeing, but I'm looking at this now. And the first set of tanks were numbered 501, 502, 503, all in sequential order.
Okay.
The second ones with the longer guns were in the 600 series. Now we're seeing the 700 series. It's all sequential.
Oh, man.
And they don't miss a number. So I'm wondering just how real any of this is.
I think there's a fair amount of fresh paint on a lot of this stuff.
Uh-huh. Look, we're 704 now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
707, 708. This is amazing.
It's a little too
perfect. The next one's
going
to be the 800s.
I think some of those guns might be, you know.
Well, yeah. They do say that these are a demonstration. It's not, they're not putting out the real artillery.
Some of the like rifles they hold might be made of wood. I don't know. I don't want to say that. I mean, I did, but.
Okay. That is unreal. But, you know, another thing that a lot of people don't seem to realize is that, you know, this whole issue of reunification is something South Korea really doesn't want. And you might think they do. They don't. And you know why? East Germany. East Germany and West Germany merging was very, very expensive for West Germany and the West in general. And it took a long time. And they're still seeing the effects of it. Can you imagine the South having to shoulder the burden of reintegrating all these people from the North who have been pretty much traumatized over the last half century or so? It would take a very long time. It would not go very smoothly at all. It would be immensely expensive. It's something that the United States doesn't even want. And, you know, I think in some way they would prefer a kind of a China-friendly North Korea that isn't quite as crazy to a westernized North Korea, because that would just simply be a huge undertaking.
Yeah. No, your point of logical extent, that is, I think we touched on a little bit, but it's such an important attribute of this, is let us do the imaginative thinking of what is the illogical extent? What is the impact? Who would look at us and say, what did you just do if we did respond to some kind of with a preemptive strike of some kind? And what would the climate be? What would you do with the people if you were to liberate or, quote, or nation build, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. or save people from this oppressive regime? You know, okay, fine. What would occur? Would we be taking in refugees here in the U.S.?
Oh, we don't do that.
Oh, we don't do that.
No, we can't do that. We're full. We're closed for the night. Sorry,
you know what I'm
come
saying,
back
though?
Later. We'll
it's
try
those
then.
It's simple practicalities that it's not in the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. It's not in the framing. It's not in the rationales at all and the escalations. Okay? And that's where we need expertise and that wisdom of experience and people who care. And as you've said, I think what we're saying is it's just not clear to us that this administration really understands and cares enough.
And, you know, I'm not saying other administrations got it right either, but they didn't get it this wrong. And this is something that we really need to be concerned about, because you have people that have no experience in this realm who are pressing buttons and seeing what kinds of things happen, and they don't understand the risks that they're taking for us. And at some point, we have to say, this is unacceptable, and how do we stop it? How do we stop this nightmare from unfolding? Well, one way, there's an election tonight in Georgia for one seat for one representative. If that swings the Democratic way, that'll at least be a shot in the arm for the opposition. It's not enough, but it's something, and we need to start. Taking bigger pieces back and being a little bit loud and vocal and getting many, many more people to be a part of this. Because I know that throughout the country, people are concerned and worried and second guessing what has just happened. And, you know, we had the vote in Turkey a couple of days ago, yes, where all this power now has been given to the president, and Trump congratulated him for this, for taking away democracy from the people. And yeah, there are a lot of supporters there that seem to want this. Populist movements tend to have a lot of popularity. It doesn't make them any less worrisome. Trump doesn't see that. Trump sees that as a good thing, being more secretive. He's not allowing people to see who's visiting him in the White House, something we got used to under Obama. He's not revealing his tax returns. We don't know what he's up to. We don't know what kinds of relationships he has, and he has no intention of telling us. These are unacceptable facts, and we can't let them become normal. We have to continuously react and put pressure on. And think of it this way. The more pressure you put on and the more distractions that you can make for this government, the less chance they have to focus their attention on the really dangerous things and get us all killed. Because that's
that,
what...
That will, right. That will hopefully be at least idle, and we'll be able to maintain the status quo without meddling.
Yes.
Irresponsible meddling. But it's true. We, as a country, I think we knew in the past, and I think we need to get back to that. What exactly, what scenario and resultant failure mode is unacceptable? Because these stakes, like when we escalate such that we are, the stakes become so high that the failure mode, is it something we can actually recover from? And I'm not just talking about it as a country, like humanity. Like that's the kind of stuff people are throwing around as hypotheticals. Half jokingly, but a lot of them, you know, bitterly serious. And these little actions, every little bit is a part of that shot in the arm. Really, it needs to be an EpiPen, you know, right in the neck or something. I don't know.
But yeah, I think we could all use
we gotta really wake up and get a grip and wield a little bit of our own power. I mean, there has got to be answers to a lot of these questions. It ought not be that we don't know who is entering the White House. It ought not be that we do not know who is funding or otherwise wields debts over our commander in chief. And on, there's so many issues. And the important thing is, don't get overwhelmed. Don't get mad. Get very, very organized.
For the first time in my memory, we have a tax day. Today is tax day.
It is.
It's the 18th, but for some reason it got... Well, okay, I know the reason, actually. April 15th was Saturday, so you can't do it on Saturday.
Right.
And you certainly can't do it on Sunday, so that's the 16th. And the 17th in Massachusetts is Patriot Day, and that somehow makes the entire country able to skip it. And they do the Boston Marathon on that day as well. So that's today. The 18th is the day you're supposed to submit all your taxes. And in recent memory, or in my extended memory, you always have a news story, a little fluff piece saying, oh, the president filed his tax return and made this amount of money this year. We're not getting that from Trump. We're getting nothing. We're getting secrets. We're getting threats. We're getting all kinds of insults directed at various people. And it's really disturbing to see the kinds of things that he's focused upon. I mentioned the race in Georgia for one representative. And he is attacking that person and saying all kinds of mean lies about him, saying he's for crime and he wants more illegal, you know, things that basically are trash talk in political advertising. He is the president of the United States. He should not be tweeting these insults towards specific people just because they represent a different opinion than him. Doesn't he have more important things to do? It's not presidential. And hopefully it'll backfire. We'll find out tonight. I'll be kind of upset if this Democrat doesn't win and we start seeing some reversal of where we've been going, because we've got a lot of tests ahead, not just in this country, but all around the world. Turkey was one bad thing that happened. The French elections are coming up next Sunday, and if that country moves towards Le Pen and more populism and more racism and anti-immigrant and all sorts of horrible things like that, I fear for the future of Europe as well. So these are very serious issues, serious times throughout the world, and we have to take them not with a grain of salt. That's for sure. This is a fundraising edition of Off the Wall. I forgot to mention that. Please, if you want to support us, support our opinions, which is what they are, please call 631-632-6901. Pledge whatever you can afford. Get a WUSB 40th anniversary T-shirt or coffee mug or sweatshirt or whatever else that we have. We have a denim canvas bag. Those are very handy. We can
definitely... A tote bag. I believe it has the 40th anniversary logo.
Wow.
Screen printed upon it.
You know, the 40th anniversary logo, by the way, the zero part of it was our original logo from the original WUSB shirts, which is kind of like a radio radius signal thing. And then what some clever person did was create a four out of that artwork and stick it in front. So now it says 4-0. Well, it wasn't a zero before. We didn't see it as a zero. We saw it as radio waves. But now it looks like 40. And it's our 40th anniversary. 1977 is when we went on the air.
And it's two radio waves marking the two station frequencies.
That's right. We have 90.1 FM and 107.3 for the campus at Stony Brook here.
I don't know that that's why, but it sounds good.
Yeah, so we can make these things up, absolutely. 631-632-6901. We have friendly volunteers standing by to take your phone call. Actually, not so friendly, because we've been bantering for 50 minutes now without giving out the phone number once, and I'm sorry about that. 631-632-6901. Please make up for our lapse in judgment and keep the place going, because, you know, even if you disagree with what we're saying, somebody else will say something different in some other time. And that's how it works. That's how speech is supposed to work. And it makes you think, you know, it makes you think and come up with ideas and have a dialogue and reach understanding. You know, the things we're saying about North Korea, they apply to the people we disagree with as well. They could be people that we completely disagree with on everything from healthcare to civil rights to sports, you name it, everything. But yet we can still have a civil discussion with them and respect them as people. I think that's entirely possible. And yeah, Trump supporters as well. So you apply that to the rest of the world, all of a sudden, people are talking to each other. You might actually get somewhere. Yeah, there'll be setbacks. There'll be disappointments. There'll be betrayals. But you have to at least go down that road.
And down that road we'll go again next week.
That's true. That's true.
Another exciting edition of Off the Wall.
Where we can say how good we did this week with phone calls, hopefully. 631-632-6901.
Wow, they're coming in, I'm sure. Don't forget WUSB.FM. We're happy to bring community radio. And this is freeform community content where we get to talk and play music. And it's those donations that make everything go.
Yeah, absolutely. 631-632-6901. That's our telephone number. And our email address is otw@2600.com.
For Kyle, I'm Kyle.
For Emmanuel, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. And for the North Korean military, as they march away, hopefully they stay calm. Hopefully we can actually have a dialogue and, you know, have some fun sing-alongs together or something like that. We'll keep you updated, folks. Keep it tuned to 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, WUSB.FM. And please give a call to 631-632-6901. Show your support for the radio station.
No, I know they don't like American dogs, but maybe they like American cats.
I didn't see a single cat when I was in North Korea.
You didn't?
I didn't see a dog either, to be honest.
Yikes.
I heard dogs barking. But, you know, they were honest about eating dogs. They said, yes, we eat dogs. We also have pet dogs. I'm not really sure how they distinguish them. But other countries that do this, they will lie and say, no, we don't eat dogs, when they do.
Wow.
So, you know, talk to a North Korean. Actually, it's fascinating. You share all kinds of interesting stories, and you realize that there are a lot of similarities that you might not have thought were there. The kids laugh the same way. The adults have the same issues sometimes. Yeah, it's an amazingly weird society. But once we recognize that, maybe we can get somewhere and accomplish something and survive the next 100 years. Wouldn't that be nice? All right, that's it for Off the Wall. Stay tuned for Finn coming up next. We will see you, God willing, in another week. My friends, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. My name is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution. In a very short time, we're going to have Chandler Travis on the air. And quite the singer-songwriter, quite amazing, amazing songs. We're going to hear some, and we're going to offer his CD as a very cheap premium, maybe $10. So stay tuned for that, plus some other great stuff coming up. Yeah, that, of course, the Incredible Casuals right there doing Summer Nights. And Incredible Casuals were founded by Chandler Travis and Steve Shook. And they also had Ricky Bates in it and Johnny Spampinato. That's right, Joey's brother. And made a bunch of great records beginning, I think, in the mid-'80s there, around 87. And Chandler Travis is... Since the time of the ending of The Incredible Casuals, which I think was around 2006 or so, maybe earlier, official ending anyway, has been having a solo career. We're going to talk to him in a few moments, putting out some great, great records, some beautiful, shimmering songs, sort of like alt-pop. I don't know what you'd call them.
But yeah. So here's something from Chandler Travis's new record, who we're going to be speaking to in just a few moments. And the name of the new album is, well, first of all, the name of the group currently is the Chandler Travis Philharmonic. And the name of the new one is Waving Kissy Head, Volume 2 and 1. That's right. You got that right. So this is called Make Yourself Happy. And let's do that.
You don't have to be a hermit. You don't have to be a monk. Good luck finding someone else to straighten out your junk. You gotta make yourself happy.
Make yourself happy.
You gotta make yourself happy.
Make yourself happy.
Or you don't have to go far. And you already got your own cause. Give romance a little break.
Yeah. stick, filled it with ink, wrote down what God said, didn't even blink. I'm human.